The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, what most of us are looking for, whether it's why we come here to IMC on a Thursday night or why we do so many of the things that we're doing, what most of us are looking for is a sense of happiness, a sense of fulfillment or completion in some way, some satisfaction, some happiness. And we are often looking where society tells us to look. We're often looking that somehow this fulfillment of our desires, if we can just get what we want, that's where we'll be happy. But if it were that simple, you would not be here. You would be out there getting what you want. And you would be happy and wouldn't need to get more. And turns out, right, it doesn't really work that way. Even though it does a little bit, right? If we didn't sometimes have some experience of some happiness, like, oh, that was great, then we would stop looking for out there for things that are going to make us happy. But sometimes there is some little bite of pleasure, some bite of satisfaction, but it's not enduring. It's not reliable. And it's somehow isn't enough. But this doesn't mean that desire, this wish to have things, doesn't mean that desire isn't a natural part of our life, and it's not a natural and that it can't be a supportive part of practice, Buddhist practice, meditation practice. Sometimes we hear that in the Buddhist teachings that desire is, you know, the cause of all suffering. Sometimes it gets painted with a big broad brush, saying that it's the cause of all suffering and it's not the cause of happiness. But in fact, it can be a part of finding a happiness that is enduring. Desire can be a part of finding a happiness that is satisfying. So desire is a very broad umbrella term. I'm going to unpack it a little bit in this talk, but it's an umbrella term generally for having a wish, having a desire for something, having a wish for something. And we can wish for beautiful things. We can wish for beautiful aspirations. We can wish for awakening, liberation, greater compassion. We can desire well-being for our family, well-being for our neighbors, well-being for our communities. We can desire well-being for everybody in the world. So there are a lot of beautiful desires that we can live through and act on. But there's also a lot of desires that can cause harm to ourselves, that can cause harm to others. And even when we're not perhaps causing harm with our desires, maybe the way in which we sometimes are going after our desires causes harm. But there's also a way in which we can act in our desires that is supportive. So there's one Buddhist word that gets sometimes translated as desire, and that's called chanda. And this gets translated as desire, but it also gets translated as zeal, intention, will, interest. So in that way, it's just a neutral term to kind of designate or talk about this wish for something. I like this word zeal. It kind of implies like a certain energetic, enthusiastic maybe way of wanting to do something. So it's like it Chanda has like this directedness of action. Like, okay, we have this wish to go this particular direction. It has maybe our interest like goes a particular direction and has that kind of a flavor to it. But with whatever translation we use or whatever kind of understanding we use, there isn't anything there that's inherently unwholesome or inherently wholesome or neutral. It's all about the way in which we apply it or in which direction we're applying it. So in the Buddhist scriptures in the suttas, there's the story of the Buddha's attendant, Ananda. And he's talking to somebody who went up to him. We might imagine that I don't know. I was going to say it might have happened after the death of the Buddha, but I don't actually know. So this person went up to Ananda and asked him, what's the purpose of living the holy life taught by the Buddha? So the holy life being, you know, what is the practice? And there's a lot of people, of course, that ordain under the Buddha at that time. So somebody's asking Ananda, who's one of the senior people, what's the purpose? Why? Why are you doing this practice? And Ananda, who was a monk, why are you a monk? And Ananda replies that it's for the abandoning of desire. And that Ananda continues and says that there is this path that leads to the abandoning of desire. And this path is the four roads to success. This isn't a common list for those of you who are keeping track of Buddhist lists, and there's no end of lists, right? That this isn't in the kind of like the usual collection of them, this four roads to success. So then Ananda continues on to say to this person that's asking him, like kind of like, well, what are these four roads to success? And Ananda says, well, it's namely endeavoring and concentration. So these two things combined, kind of doing some effort and settling the mind. Endeavoring and concentration due to or accompanied with desire, energy, the mind, and or investigation. And the person said, wait a minute. In the suttas it says, such being the case, kind of like the stilted language, right? This is impossible. One cannot abandon desire by using desire. You can't abandon desire by the means of desire. And then rather than saying directly what in response to what this person is saying, Ananda asks them a question. Asks the person who's talking to him, so before you came here to this park, did you have a desire? Did you have energy? Did you have a thought? Did you have some reflection related to going to this park? And then did all of that desire and that energy that you put forth, the thoughts and the reflections about going to the park, did those end once you got to the park? And then the person said, oh, of course, yes, that's true. So it's in this way that desire can help lead to the end of desire. It's this way that energy or thought or investigation can help lead to the end of energy, thought, and investigation. So in order to succeed at a task, to achieve, attain, to get what we desire, is the Buddha laid out these four elements. One, we need to be interested. We need to have some zeal. We need to have desire. This can be applied towards anything, right? Towards whether it's an object or going to the gym regularly or having a meditation practice or whatever it might be. So the first is to have an interest. This is one way we can think about having desire. The second is to apply a certain amount of energy and a certain amount of persistence. Right? It doesn't work with we just because they have the idea that we want to do something. And the third is we need to have some thoughts. We need to think about how it is that we can go about achieving this result that we are wishing for. And then the fourth is to investigate, review, and reflect. Part of what we are reflecting about is, are we there yet? You know, this feeling like, okay, I'm going down this direction. Is it the right direction? Have I achieved this? Have I obtained it? Is this still the right direction to go? So these four roads to success are part of a way in which we can use desire in a way to help us find the end of the desire. But this can get a little bit tricky. Because I'm talking about their roads to success, right? And so often there can be so much that's tied up around with success. And there can be so much that can be tied up with this around this idea that we want something that's out there in the future. We need something, we wish for something that's out there in the future. I think I'm missing one of my pages of my notes, and hopefully it's not on my computer at home, on my printer. And it looks like it is. Okay. So we'll see how I do with some of my pages missing. So one of the things that to help us with not getting all tangled up with wanting in particular the success is that this idea of practicing, let's see, how does this go exactly? Practicing the Dharma in accordance with the Dharma. That is, can we practice in a way, if we want to have more happiness, if we want to have more peace, if we want to have more freedom, can we practice in a way that embodies that peace, that freedom, as best we can? That is, it's so often we hear the message, well, the ends justify the means, or all's well that ends well. These two different ideas, they have this idea that, okay, well, as long as you got what you wanted, then how you got there doesn't really matter. But in Dharma practice and spiritual practice in general, it does matter how you get there. Because when we have this idea that happiness or something that we want is going to be out there, we kind of set up this binary, like thing that's out there, and then here, how things are now. But instead, it's actually more like a spectrum. It's more like that we're wanting to move a particular way along the spectrum. So instead of saying, I don't have it and I will have it in the future, can we cultivate a little bit of it now? Can there be a flicker of it now? So that there's more and more peace, there's more happiness, there's more ease. Can we practice in a way that supports that? So for example, can we have a wish? Can we have a desire? But in a way that's not agitating. Can we have a wish? Can we have a desire in a way that is, like I talked earlier about aspiration, in a way that feels like I'm going like this with my hands, kind of opening, that feels this with soft and some spaciousness around it. So to practice the Dharma in accordance with the Dharma. Practice in a way that includes the goal. But there's another type of desire also. I keep on looking at my notes thinking that maybe miraculously page 3 will show up, but it hasn't shown up yet. I'll just stop looking at my notes here. But there's another type of desire. And this sometimes has this weird expression that often I have for a long time found kind of like confusing. I didn't quite understand until just recently I read an article in, I think it was, I don't remember, Tricycle Magazine. I don't know if anybody reads this. It's kind of like this Buddhist magazine. And Joseph Goldstein, who's one of the elders in this tradition, he wrote, I imagine he didn't write it. I think it's based on a talk that he gave. And that is this, we sometimes have this expression, the desire of becoming. I'm like, I don't quite understand what is a becoming. And Joseph Goldstein, he lays it out in this way that made perfect sense to me. Maybe you'll recognize some of this too. This idea of becoming is kind of this way in which we are a little bit energetically tumbling into the future. And one way that we often do this is with planning. Planning, 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 planning. So in some ways that we're always thinking about, okay, well, this might happen. I might get delayed, so I better pack a snack in addition to my lunch, because just in case I don't come back in time, I'm going to be hungry, and I don't know what the temperature is going to be, so I have to bring an umbrella as well as that jacket, and which is fine, right? Of course we need to do planning. But there can be a way in which the planning just kind of gets a little bit... what's the word I'm looking for? Just incessant, going around and around and rehearsing over and over again and trying to think about everything. So this the craving of becoming, of trying to like project ourselves into the future in which everything is taken care of. So of course we need to plan, but can we do it in such a way that we plan and then we're finished? We do it as long as it's useful. It's so often that we start planning and planning and planning again, and it's no longer useful. We're just rehearsing the same thing again and again. So that's one way this kind of, this desire sometimes is like this, has a way in which throws us into the future in the mind. We're throwing ourselves in the future, and we're no longer present for what's happening. That's one way. A second is with expectations. That is, can be really, I think probably many of us know, having these expectations with a meditation. It's like, I had that great experience that time, and I was wearing that red shirt. And I was sitting in this posture, and I had this for breakfast, and I had just listened to that talk. You know, like where we just kind of are creating or trying to create so we can have the exact conditions so that we can have this experience again. It never works. But we have these expectations, well, that thing should happen again. And who can blame us? Sometimes meditation experiences are pleasurable. Maybe there's some insights that's meaningful that happens for us. But this type of desire of trying to recreate something, trying to force it, make it happen, isn't the way forward. Instead, it kind of gets us stuck. Instead of being with what's actually happening in this moment, the reality of this moment, letting go of what we expect to happen, instead to be with what is actually happening, is a way in which this, our desire, can trip us up a little bit, can get in the way. And not only that's the, about expectations that we're not present, but also expectations feed the comparing mind. We have this idea that, we can see somebody else's life, either they're how we imagine their meditations are, maybe they sit particularly still, or we might know, see how they are, are in life, or they may be talking about, oh yeah, I went to this retreat, or I sat for this many hours, or whatever it might be. There's a difference between being inspired by, wow, okay, this person is finding a way. Maybe I can too. There's a difference between that and getting self-judgment, like, wow, this person's doing all that, and what have I done? And wow, this person's doing that, and oh, gee, I haven't done it. I can't do that. So somehow when we have expectations, it kind of helps create the conditions for comparing. They have it, I don't have it. And this is where desire can not be supportive, can fall into this trap of the self-critical mind, the self-critical voice that's somehow feeding this idea that maybe some other time we can do it, but right now we can't. The truth is, all that's being asked of us, all that practice is letting go, softening, opening, lessening our clenching in whatever way we can, in the best that we can. It doesn't have to look any particular way, and to recognize that sometimes that's available and sometimes it's barely available. Maybe all we can do is have the idea that there should be some letting go without actually doing this. So we forget that freedom, liberation, is not about getting somewhere, not about it being out there, or it's not about having particular meditative experiences. We can let go, we can soften our clinging in any moment, in any moment. In when we find ourselves within the midst of traffic and feeling ourselves getting perturbed, let's say, with the other drivers, we can just notice, oh yeah, okay, here's that perturbing. And there can be this movement, I don't have to be this perturbed. And maybe it's just a short moment, but we shouldn't underestimate how powerful these can be. We shouldn't underestimate that movement. We're talking about a spectrum again. Every little movement that has a little bit more letting go, a little bit less clinging, kind of helps support our practice, helps support having a life that has more freedom, more flexibility, more happiness. So practicing with this desire of becoming, a lot of it is about mindfulness. Desire of becoming is about, I'm sorry, about practicing with it is just noticing when we're doing that. I like this expression, kind of like tumbling forward into the future, because sometimes there is this momentum to this feeling of going forward. It can be a kind of like leaning into, I use this word energetically, but maybe another way to say that is just all the thoughts are there. And we're not even really aware of the body or any experiences that we're having here. So this type of desire, this desire of becoming, includes having the desire of expectations and having the desire of whatever was on page 3 that I said earlier. This is funny that I go here and I look at these pages and I'm like, oh wait, these are the wrong words here. And so one more way that this shows up and is definitely related is about rushing. So maybe in the same way, rushing implies that, you know, something in the future is going to be better. I got to get there. maybe because we're late too, but also there can be a general sense of, yeah, okay, what's next? Whatever, okay, what is here I want to go next? So that's the second type of desire, is the desire of becoming. Then there's also a third kind of desire. It's a desire for sensual pleasures. The desire for eating delicious food, sexual desires, the desire to feel soft, and I'm going like soft, like this, comfortable all the time. Desire for listening to things that are pleasant, birds singing or our favorite music. All the sensory, all that are related to our sense experiences is a second type. And this type of desire isn't inherently a problem, but it can get in the way. It can get in the way. And one way it can get in the way is that it can hide some of our suffering. It can hide some of the difficulties. It can hide some of the dissatisfaction. It can hide some of the longing, the lack of ease that we're having in our lives. And then when it's hidden, we don't have a chance to work with it. We don't have a chance to be with it. We don't have a chance to understand our difficulties. So sometimes if we're feeling uncomfortable, if we're feeling suffering, one strategy is to want something out there to fix it. Want something out there to take care of it. We want something out there to make it better or to distract us from it. So rather than being with our own experience, we're really focused on something out there. And there's this allure of pleasure or some wonderful desire it's so infatuated with it that we just get pulled into the fantasy of this and really get disconnected from ourselves. And we don't notice that we're running away from some discomfort. We don't notice that we're disconnecting from some experience that we're having. And there's a reason why we're running away, right? Just because it's uncomfortable. But the chances are, with running away, we're not providing an opportunity for whatever's uncomfortable for us to learn from it, to work with it in a constructive way, to deal with it, to experience it. Of course, none of us want to feel pain, and none of us want to feel discomfort. But often we become so enamored with that thing, that event, that person, that experience, that cookie, that meditative experience, that true love, that relationship that's going to be ideal. Whatever it might be, sometimes we become so enamored with that thing out there that we don't pay attention to what's happening in our hearts. We don't pay attention to the suffering, the difficulty that's fueling it. We might just be distracting ourselves rather than looking. Distracting ourselves, amusing ourselves, rather than inquiring, like, what's going on? What's going on here? There's so many things: alcohol, recreational drugs, getting lost in sex, getting lost in all kinds of things. There's a way of just avoiding some real world difficulties, some real world suffering that we're experiencing. And part of us probably knows that a lot of these difficulties, they are there underneath, right? Even if we are distracting ourselves or not paying attention to them. But it's somehow, if we can find a way to look at them a little bit more deeply, rather than ignoring them. I'm not saying that we have to turn look at the most painful things in our lives and look at them and stare at them and, you know, go into the abyss of the difficulty. I'm saying that we can just acknowledge, okay, this is here, and maybe we experience them a little bit, and acknowledge, okay, yeah, this is here, and then find something, some resource to support us. That resource could be all kinds of things. It could be something that we enjoy. It can be feeling the comfort. Sometimes the clothes that we wear do have some softness to them. Maybe it's just orienting towards a pleasant sensation. So obvious things are to maybe connect with somebody else, connect with other people. But to find a way in which that we don't use this endless pursuit of a sense desire as a way to kind of miss our life, because we're always running away from some of the difficulties. So we can distract ourselves, or we can somehow convince ourselves that what this object or experience or thing or person that we desire, that that's really what it's all about. Oh, I see. I'm missing another page too. That's why my... Okay, I'll see what I can do here. Yeah, so there's a way in which there's pursuing the objects out there, a way that disconnects us from maybe some suffering that's underneath. But it also that might disconnect us from the actual suffering sometimes that is involved in the pursuit. There's difficulties. There can be a clenching, a collapsing around. There can be an obsessive quality in this kind of pursuit of whatever it is that we've convinced ourselves that we need so much. So in this way, these objects out there can prevent us from looking at having this desire for these objects out there. Both the desire itself can obfuscate the suffering, and it can also help us not see the suffering that's inherent when we are really craving and clinging and looking out there for something. The experience itself is uncomfortable. So what are some of the ways that we can work with this kind of, this type of desire? This desire that's a hindrance, that doesn't help us not only to see our suffering, but if we're busy with looking at our objects or looking or busy with the pursuit, can get in the way with what might be our highest aspirations. It can get in the way of our meditation practice. It can get in the way of whatever might be important to us, important for us. So some of the ways that we can work with this is to recognize, oh, this is desire. Sometimes this simple recognition can be enough to kind of like shift our relationship to it, or shift the way in which we are involved with it. Sometimes this recognition kind of can help create a little bit of a separation, like, oh yeah, I'm over here, and there's that object over there. Sometimes we're just so wrapped up in the object, we get lost in it. Something else that we can do is to acknowledge and allow, maybe I'll use this word allow, that, okay, desire is part of the human experience. Suffering is part of the human experience as well. But can we just allow that experience to be here? Somehow, this allowing things to be helps us to put down the way in which we might be, have a certain amount of engagement or aversion with it. That then just makes it more complicated and more of a hindrance or something that gets in the way. And of course, these things are supported by mindfulness. So of course, we can do mindfulness practice that kind of bleeds over into our daily life. But also, we can just notice, how does this feel? How does this feel in the body? How does this desire feel? Because having a desire implies a sense of lack, a sense of longing, a sense of wanting. How does that feel? And sometimes to feel the unpleasantness of it helps us to unhook from the default response of always desiring things out there. So we have these three types of desire I talked about. One is the desire that leads to the end of the desire. The second is the desire of becoming, kind of this always thinking about the future. And the third is this desire for sensory experiences that are pleasurable. But whatever your philosophy might be about desire, some people are quick to justify it. Some people are quick to condemn it. Whatever it might be, and it's such a big part of human experience, desire, it's really good to study it. It's really good to get to know it. We don't have to be so quick to either embrace it or push it away, but can we just, what is this desire? What are the different forms it shows up? What does it feel like in the body? What does it feel like in the mind? Like, does the mind have some ease and some flexibility around it? Or does the mind feel like it gets locked and stuck when it's there? What's the effect when we have desire that has this different magnitudes of strength or power? What kind of effect does it have on us? What kind of effect does it have on others? It's our practice to become really familiar with desire. Can we do this in a way that has this allowing, this recognizing and this allowing, so that it can stop being a hindrance, so that it can stop getting in the way, and that we can distinguish, getting familiar with it, so that we can distinguish when is it helpful, when is it unhelpful? So it's part of to experience it, allow ourselves to feel it. So Buddhist practice, a big part of it is about distinguishing, discriminating, discerning. When is desire skillful? When is it wholesome? When is it helpful? When is it propelling us in a way that is leading to greater freedom, greater ease, greater happiness? Right, so we can have a desire that's, we can be enthusiastic about practice. We can be enthusiastic. We can have zeal. But can we do this in a way that leads to greater happiness? Can we do this in a way in which there's happiness as part of it? Can we do it in such a way that there's some peace and some opening of part of it? And so, maybe as I've said a number of times here, that one way that we can discern that the skillful from the unskillful is just through this gentle inquiry, is this getting in the way of something that's important to me? Is this somehow becoming an obstacle for something that's I wish for in my life? And does satisfying this desire, would this bring the ease and happiness that I'm expecting it will? Is this a desire, a type of desire, a family of desires that I've worked with before? And then, and have I had this when I've noticed it? Just when I finally get this, is it really bring the happiness and the ease that I'm expecting that it does? We can do these inquiries. Maybe one of some of you have heard this, kind of like this key teaching, whether whatever our philosophy about desire might be, this teaching of nothing, nothing whatsoever is worth clinging to. Clinging is not the way to happiness. Clinging is not the way to freedom. So maybe I'll end there and see if there are any questions or comments. So I guess, well, let's go into here first and then over there.
I guess I have a question or a request for a follow-up. Let's say you're completely unconscious and you follow in the clinging type of desire and you wake up on the other side of it having realized that it took you far off course from the meditation practice, the bigger goals, the whatever. How do you come back to center then? Like, do you have some instruction for not basically like the entire message of today? Let's say you didn't get it through the process, you know, just collapsed into the desire, you just like ran with it, came out on the other side, realized this was bad. But then how do you just regroup and kind of build that into meditation practice from there? I mean,
Yeah, no, it's such a great question, because of course we do this, right? We collapse into it and fall into that desires, right? We can't undo all this, you know, our socialization, and nor can we do natural selection that wants us to have some desire too, right? We can't undo that so easily. So your question is about how can we come back into balance?
Yeah, but it's like when you realize like exactly the message that you're conveying, but then from learning it the hard way, like from really seeing the aftermath of going unconscious and kind of succumbing to some pull.
Yeah, I would say actually you're already in balance if you see it, like, wow, what just happened? And you can see, like, wow, I was totally caught up in this and it led here and wow, and now I'm here and I was unconscious for that time or this. That's the moment you're already there. You're already in balance, using kind of your language. You're already being mindful. And you can experience, you can maybe like feel like, okay, so what was that experience like? It could be a little bit of reflection, like, oh, okay, it felt like this. And you could do some reflection. And these were the conditions that supported it. Maybe I'm hungry or tired, or I've just been surfing the internet and there were all these commercials, or I watched TV and there was all these commercials. Just do a little bit of review, like, oh, okay. And then the next time, it might be 1/10,000th of a time, a little bit easier. And then the time after that, it's 1/9999th, a little bit easier. And after that, it's a little bit easier. And we just, this is how it works. Just slowly, gradually, we start to learn, familiarize ourselves with when we're lost in a desire. And it becomes less seductive when we really start to understand it and feel it and experience it. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm wondering, because I'm a natural planner and worrier and like working really hard to be more present, which is why I've been trying to come to these on Mondays and Thursdays as much as possible. I'm worried that letting go of desire, I will confuse it with lack of motivation.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out how, because what you were saying makes sense, but I'm worried that I'm going to walk away and in 20 minutes I'm going to kind of forget and confuse the two. Do you have any kind of concrete takeaways for how to keep those separate? Because I have a lot of things that I want to do in my life, and I have goals set, and I function really well with plans and goals. But I also want to, I like the idea of you talking about how it doesn't have to be binary. You know, where I am now does not have to be so different or negative in comparison to where I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And treat it like a spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm just wondering if you have any little, mm-hmm. like, mind tricks for me mm-hmm. to, like, remember that it's okay to be present and work towards something, but also not be so clingy,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
I get this gentle inquiry. Yeah, that's the... Maybe we can figure this out. This gentle inquiry of, is this helping me right now? So maybe the first time you say, well, of course it's helping me, that's why I'm doing it. And then you could ask yourself again, is this helpful right now? And the second time will be a yes, because right, you are. And then maybe a third time, is this really helping me? And then you might there might start to be maybe the fourth time, is this helpful right now? An example I'm thinking of, you know, sometimes, I had this experience that, you know, I was having to get on a plane to go somewhere. I'm not a super nervous flyer, but I'm nervous about going to the airport. And I just found myself just going over and over and over again, okay, I've got to do this, and I've got to do this, and don't forget that, and don't do that. And I was somehow convinced, like, okay, I got to do all this planning, right, in order to do this. But then I just noticed, wait, I've already 500 times have already gone through this, you know, kind of played out what exactly I'm going to do and all this type of stuff. And it's like, this just wasn't helpful anymore. And so at first I was thinking, okay, this is helpful. And maybe it was the first 10 times I went through it. But after that, it wasn't helpful. It was just supporting some agitation. So to kind of just have this inquiry, is this helpful? And then maybe to recognize the first 10 times, if you find yourself doing the same thing, like how I was like stuck in this planning thing, like, okay, that's probably not so helpful. That's something that I can offer. I don't know if that's helpful.
No, it does. It does. Thank you very much.
Yeah, in a similar vein, I have a propensity to, it's not the planning that's the problem, it's the excessive obsession with details and going over and over and over, like, okay, I need to make a calendar for next year because events are happening, but then I get carried away and then, like, 2 hours are gone and there are other things to do, and I've noticed that in myself, especially since I've done the Eightfold Path program, in lots of ways. Just the way I get off the train and have to push that, your explanation of this becoming, it always seemed a little abstract to me, but this really brings it, oh yeah, that's exactly what's happening. Yeah, that's what I'm doing. So that was very useful.
Oh.
A good observation.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Okay. Well, thank you. I have the desire for you all to have a wonderful evening. And may... May your highest aspirations, may your highest wishes support you, and may they come true. Thank you.